The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
It's All-Ireland Final Week. Anything to say, boys?
No, it's great to be here. It's great.
How would you stop?
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
All right, as you can tell, we've got two legends of County Mayo in here in Mellets in Swinford. We've got Willie Joe Padden, we've got John O'Mahony. Is this a regular occurrence for you? Is this the first time that you've come together for a cup of coffee? Or am I third wheeling it here in a friendship that's always existing over the last little while?
Obviously, I got involved when I was managed Mayo. The biggest game in our lives, I suppose, was the 89 semi-final against Tyrone. And we'd have kept contact and at various times over the years. And I think Mayo's it might be one of the bigger counties, but it's the football fraternity meet, and between Willie Joe involvement, which I think we were on opposite sidelines, I think, at an under 21 county final back in the 80s as well. So we're good friends over the years. I think that's what when you have a team that's on a mission, as we were for a few years, that bond always stays there, you know. So
yeah, and I mean, I would know John O'Hare from club football as well, because I played with Benmurrett and we came up against Benhadrin quite often. I remember him robbing me of a spot in the county semi-final. I don't know what year it was, because I was down on goal and I let this rasper fly, but John put up the hand and over the bar went. So needless to say, exit for Benmurrett.
Can we talk a little bit about the first time you meet then in a professional capacity, when John is your manager? We might actually go to you first here, Willie Joe. What were your first impressions of John as county manager?
Well, I mean, Jono, I know, as I said, I knew him from club football and from managing an under 21. No, I wasn't involved in the under 21 Mayo team that you managed. But the first encounter was we had a tournament game to be played over in Leeds, I think, against Dublin. So, funny enough, I had been in Leeds a couple of summers before that, and I kind of knew the way around the city. So we were invited to a function to meet the mayor, I think, in City Hall. So myself and TJ and Noel Dirk and maybe Anthony Finnerty, who were saying, well, we get up here first and meet the mayor, and maybe that we might slip out the door then, just when there's nobody else looking. But and we knew a little place to go down the street, so we said we might have a beer while the rest of the guys were coming through. So that's exactly what we did. But to our amazement, there was five or six more of our guys down there before us. so we, obviously the conversation turned to say, well, like, what kind of manager, what's he going to be like, lads, you know, we just have to see here. So maybe maybe it's the best way to start. So we all ended up in the Irish Centre Annie up in York Road afterwards, and the rest is history. We all got on so well together, right, well, down to the years.
What's it like being introduced to a bunch of players for the first time, John, and they're all a few pints deep?
Well, look, at the context is this. I'd have to have a straight face on me, but I knew, like, really, what I had just been appointed a couple of weeks before that, and I decided that this had, you know, there was no point in trying to meet up in advance of that. I decided to stay with the panel that had been there in the 87 championship, and effectively that, I think there was whatever 19 or 20 players available to go, and I said, look, we'll take it from here. I always knew it was going to be in some ways it was a good opportunity to meet players in a different setting. It wasn't a championship match or a league match or whatever, so we all knew the context of it, but obviously we had to engage in on the field and off the field. But like the fact that there was only 20 players, I think by Sunday morning when the game was on, it was reduced to 17 or 18. And I can remember there was a lot of, we won the match, we beat Dublin at the time, but like those trophies for the winners, like, so I think even the bus driver got a trophy at that stage. So there was, and I was looking around to see if there was anyone else that we could, because there was one or two under the weather who probably didn't make the final panel when I came back, but no, it was fine. It was light-hearted, but as I said, I was a young manager at the time. I had to be very careful and be as professional as I could. And look, at it there was a lot more serious stuff to come, and when that had to be done, that was done as well, you know. So
Elland Road is quite the place to have your first match as an inter-county manager.
It is, yeah. We actually had one the following year as well. We played Galway. The first year, I think, I don't know, is it that the crowd wasn't as big as they expected or the attraction, but we flew and we were on top hotel the first year, but I noticed that the hotel was slightly downgraded the second year and we travelled, I think, by ferry, if I remember.
Yeah, you're correct, yeah. And I remember that day as well as Joe Lindsay, if you remember him, from Kiltane, he's playing right, for Mayo. Yeah. So on that day, he scored a hat-trick. So it came up years later in a quiz question, who was the last man to score a hat-trick in Elland Road? I can say Joe Lindsay. Well, Leeds were gone down the championship or somewhere. But that was it. Yeah, but the standards dropped all right in the second run. Yeah.
And sorry, you said you knew Leeds. Did you? Were you living over there for a while? Or
I was over for a couple of summers. I actually played there one summer when I was younger. You know, so I knew the town and that. So.
Was that like the sort of modern American football, or American Gaelic football sort of summer? Like, did you get scouted to play semi-professionally over there, sort of thing, was it?
Well, it wasn't semi-professionally, no. It was just going for the summer. When the club got, and I was very, very young now, I was about 18, I think, or 19, right. You know. But when we got knocked out of the championship, to be quite honest, I shouldn't have been there at all playing, but it was one of those things that happened.
Yeah. And what was, like, playing in England in the 80s, like, Gaelic football is, like, a relatively interesting thing. Was there any sense at all, maybe from, maybe some sort of distaste at all from the English public that this was happening, or anyone around Leeds?
No, well, you see, really, it was the Irish diaspora there, and that's where most of the crowd would have come. Sure. But because it was in Elland Road, it would have got a fair bit of publicity and stuff.
Negative publicity?
Not really.
Well, the mayor had Irish connections, so basically.
It was actually funded, part of it, by the council itself. It was maybe an effort to integrate, you know, relationships between the Irish community in Leeds with the people there and whatever. So it was perfect for us and it was perfect for them, and they were very happy with it. The fact that they actually did it a second year was it's not usual to have those kind of things repeated, but it was. So there was a good reasoning behind it, and I suppose it was, like, at that time, any trip away for a team, you know, especially it was usually held before the season started. Right. So it was a good way of if you like, a bonding session as well, where the hair was going to be let down a little bit and all of that. So it fitted the bill, let's put it like that.
How important were those bonding sessions, Willie Joe, whether it was good sessions out and abroad, or whether it was at home after, I don't know, a good Connacht championship win or something like that? But how important were those nights in terms of bonding your team?
I think it was very important. Like, you know, the bunch of guys that was there when I was there, like, you know, we mostly all hung out together. And, you know, after a game, you might go and have a few beers, especially maybe league football, not so much in championship, as John would tell you. But, it's important. And, you create a kind of a respect for the lads you're playing with. And, you know, ultimately on the field, when it comes down to maybe a ball to be won or the game to be won, everybody would be prepared to put their shoulder to the wheel because they were prepared to fight for each other, which would be the important thing. So from that point of view, I think it's just absolutely great.
When it comes to that era of management, John, how advanced did you feel that you left the Mayo job compared to when you took the Mayo job? And I don't even mean the stuff that you brought to the table. I mean how the game itself changed and how the evolution of the professionalism of the game started to develop.
Well, look, it was unrecognisable. It's unrecognisable now from what it was then, but it was part of the evolvement. And, you know, if you go back in the history of Mayo, the 70s, for instance, was a washout in the sense of Mayo didn't win any Connacht championship. Even though we won under 21 and minor, and I was on teams that won that at that time. I think we won another title, minor title, in 78, but it never progressed for some reason. I remember I played in the 73 and 75 Connacht finals, and I think of the under 21 team that won in 74, there was 11 of them on the 75 team, which was, in retrospect, when I look back with a manager's hat, it was too many. Yeah. And I think the same year John Morley was retired, if you like. And when I again thinking from the management point of view, what was needed was a number of the, like, Mayo had won the league in the 70s with the Joe Corcorans and the John Morleys and Johnny Careys and all these, and if some of them had been kept around for a while, but I suppose there was this hope that this, we had won minor and we won 121 3 years later, but we needed, if you like, help from the more experienced hands, and I think that was a mistake at the time. And then we lost to Sligo in the Connacht final, and all of a sudden my intercounty career was over at 23. Now, I wasn't a Lionel Messi or anything like that, so I fully recognise that, but there would have been some players on that team that would have, I think, have a longer career if it was handled differently. Then it got to the 80s, Liam O'Neill came in, and I suppose gave Willie Joe would come in here, that he gave a...
Yeah, certainly it changed the whole training regime and probably the thinking behind, you know, the football as well. And it was the first time that we actually started doing weights. You know, the whole panel done weights for the winter, and then you were like, it was a whole new different outlook. And having said that as well, it came as a more professional as well, like more organised and more, you know, fellas were expected to do X amount on their own and do running, maybe stamina running a whole lot. And then, you know, from there, things started to kick off. Like I was on the first team that won. In 81, we won the Connacht Championship. That was the first in 11 years, I think, that we won.
That's
so
right.
So basically, from the, we had 81, then we got beaten, I think, 82, 83. Back again, I think, 85, I think. O'Neill was still in charge in 85,
drew with Dublin
in All-Ireland semi-final. Probably should have won the drawn game.
Yeah,
and then Jono came after that then, and so it went on to 89.
Right.
Yeah, well, you see, what happened, Liam O'Neill had been under 21 manager, and when he stepped up to senior, he asked me would I be interested in the under 21, and sure, I had been coaching at club level and college level and so on, but I took on that. We won the All-Ireland in 83, so therefore, I suppose, once Liam stepped down, but he had brought this sense of, I mean, the 85 final semi-final was an amazing game, the drawn game, because it was so close and you know, Mayo could have been, I think it probably sowed the seeds for what happened afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
And Mayo were caught then in 86 and
by
7.
By Ross Common,
yeah.
And Galway maybe 87.
Liam O'Neill stepped down, and I was interviewed for the job, got the job. And at that time as well, like, there was a kind of lower expectation in Mayo, so that if as a manager, if you kind of won a Connacht title, you kept your job, it was seen as a kind of an end in itself. So I felt that, my feeling was that to carry on what had been the foundation that had been set there, and these lads were still okay. They were, you know, I think you might have been in the 27, 28, but there was still a good shot here. And then there was a number of the under 21s, Noel Durkins and a number of fellas that came through. So I felt that there was an opportunity, and Connacht and Ulster were the poor relations of the two provinces at that time. It was Dublin, Kerry, you know, that kind of stuff. So we felt that when 89 came, there was an opportunity here to raise the bar and break the glass ceiling and get to the thing. So we had won the Connacht Championship in 88, played Meath in the All-Ireland Championship in the semi-final. We were, I think, 10 or 12 points down 10 minutes in the second half. And when the game was gone, we started playing and came back to 4 or 5 points, and then got a disallowed goal as well.
I think Liam McHale scored a goal.
So I felt there was a need for, if you like, the psychological side of it. I think we were as fit and whatever. So we introduced that in 89 and got over the line against Tyrone, which was, it was a fantastic feeling, if you like, but of course the county went mad straight away. And which was great, because it was the first time, and you were learning how to deal with it and try and insulate the players from it. But I mean, every training session between the semi-final and final, I'd say there was 3,000 or 4,000 people at it, you know. So there was no lockdowns at that stage or whatever. But that kind of was the history of it, and it went on from there then.
Well, that's a good place to pick up, actually, the open training sessions. Like, from a playing perspective, was that something that created any unease at all going into the finals, or did the hype seep into the camp as a result of these massive collections of people at your training sessions before All-Irelands?
Well, probably it's hard to say. Maybe it did. But I think the crowds, like there was only one night, I think, or two nights where you could sign autographs and that, if I can remember, wasn't
it? Yeah, well, we tried to structure it, but there was two dressing rooms in McHale Park, old McHale Park, and literally we had a panel of about 30 or whatever, and half had been one panel and half in the other, but it was impossible to get from one dressing room to the other after 7 o'clock any evening, because the fans were in there. And obviously now and forevermore, you'd have changed the setup in the sense that you were in more of a bubble, which you need to be, and may all need to be this week and hour. But maybe in some ways it's gone to the other extreme now. Yeah, like, sure. I would be very strong on that. I know that you have press nights now for All-Irelands where you have a manager on maybe one player or three players or something. And to be honest, like, what I would have always done there is that if some player came to me and says, I have no interest in saying anything here, I'd say, go out to the physio or go somewhere else. But inevitably, you diluted the coverage or the pressure on one player.
Yeah.
If, for instance, this week we're seeing one or two players constantly in the media. And I don't know, does that... I think that's the other extreme. So we had the opposite, and it has evolved to this now. So we'll see. We hope that it's a better recipe. But in some ways, you see, what you need to do is to embrace it as well a little bit. And I know in my days in Galway, we produced all the players there, and it didn't have any effect. And again, some of them didn't want, one or two of them didn't want, and that was fine too. You know,
was the hype different in Galway?
It was, yeah.
As in just much less of it?
Oh, less of it, yeah. I mean, you didn't have flags until the Wednesday before. You didn't have for Connacht at all. And, you know, on houses and jerseys and so on. You had none of that until the Wednesday before the final. And it was just building up nicely then. And obviously all the hype was after the game, which is an ideal way to have it. But, I think the difference maybe in Galway is you have hurling and football and camogie and all the rest of it. And there's always some team in an All-Ireland final. So it's a different scene, really, you know. Different.
Probably the fact as well, maybe the hurlers might want to see the footballers win it. Like, well, there might be a certain amount of that.
There would be a tendency of that. But I always equated the, you know, the expectancy in the county. Like, for instance, in Leitrim, there'd be very little or no expectancy, and we had to deal with that as well. But the Churchgate collection for the training fund would be before the first round,
right.
Whereas in Mayo it wouldn't happen maybe until the Connacht final or afterwards, whereas in Galway there was no fundraising at all until between the semi-final and final. So it kind of gave you the level of what you know, there's a coping mechanism was maybe better in that sense.
From your perspective, really, Joe, if we look at it over a period of time rather than geography, what have you noticed in terms of the build-up now compared to when you were a player?
I think, well, in comparison to my time, like, you know, there was a certain amount of supporters out there, but I mean, in the last 15 years, I'd say the young people that's gone into the GA and involved in, like, all around the county, like, it's you know, it's amazing. Like, you see every young kid going around now with a Mayo jersey, and you know, which is great. Like, and I think there's way more. Well, the game has got way more publicity as well, and way more advertising, and obviously the young people have latched onto it. Like, I mean, going back in the day, I remember going down to a league game in Castlebar, maybe in early 80s, there mightn't be 300 people at it. Now, if you have a league game in Castlebar, you're guaranteed 10 anyhow, you know?
10,000.
Yeah. So, like, that's a big thing. So I think it's the whole thing has changed, and the whole GA thing, all the young ones have certainly bought into it, and you know, and fair play to them, like.
Can we talk about Tyrone in 89 then? It's obviously going to be quite prescient this week given the opposition. It is the bandage game, Willie Joe, for people who aren't familiar. What are your overall recollections of that game when you first think of that match with Tyrone?
Well, just before the game, Tyrone in particular, I think they just came down and said, well, you know, we have to play Mayo. We're going to be in the final now. Now, they were in the All-Ireland final in 86 and they were beaten by Kerry. But in fairness, we had different ideas, and I mean, I remember them coming unfinished business was their T-shirt that they were wearing, like.
Right.
So, like, and we knew that. So obviously, like, we had it well they're well sussed out. And, you know, to us it was another game and we had to get stuck into it, and we have a chance here of making the All-Ireland final. That's the way we've seen it. We've seen it, certainly we were in there with a 50-50 chance, where I think Tyrone maybe had underestimated us slightly. But as the game turned out, we just got stuck in, and yeah, I ended up with this bandage on my head, or I think I'd...
So what happened?
Well, I was running across the field for a ball, and one of the Tyrone lads was running out, and I went down to pick up the ball, and his knee just hit off my head, and I got up, nothing. Then I could feel the old blood coming down, so I was whisked out to the sideline, and Frank Davey put a couple of stitches in me, and I could hear John say, get him back out. Frank took out this wrap, wherever he got it, and a cap on top of that. So I ended up going out. I didn't know what was on my head actually going out, but I said, here it goes. I got to go here.
Yeah. Where was your compassion, John?
It was it's one of the iconic pictures. I talked to Frank Davey actually yesterday about it. I think it was when we got over the hill and won the game. I think the fundraising started in earnest, and I think that same cap was auctioned about 20 times as the original. And I think there was a little bit more than Willie Joe's blood on the other ones. But it was I do remember this scene on the sideline. You know, and poor old Frank, I was putting pressure on him because we didn't want to make a substitute or anything else. You know, we wanted him back where we needed him, and it worked out, and it was a moment that has been recollected, and I see the pictures in every preview whenever Mayo are there again. It's always there. So look at it. It's one of those memories. But it was the unfinished business thing that Willie, like. It was a bit naive of them to, you know, they were pictured on the paper with this unfinished business. So behind the four walls of the dressing room, I think it's safe to realise it now. Well, you know, we're going to finish their business, you know, rather than, you know, in fairness, they had been 6 points up against Kerry in 86 and they had got a penalty. And the penalty was sent over the bar. So if that, they'd have been 9 points up if it was a goal. It was 7 points up, but I think Kerry won it by 6 or 7 points in the end. Pats Bland got a goal, but it was that, you know, we felt that we were there to ambush them, and that was the thing. And that particular year in the Connacht Championship, we drew with Galway and beat them well in the replay. We had the famous it went to extra time, which was common in the replay above in Hyde Park, where we were. It was an amazing game, but the resilience of the team that day was brilliant, in the sense that we were three points down, I think, or 4 points down, and Roscommon got a penalty, 4 points ahead, and Roscommon got a penalty and put it in the net when it was 2 points actually, and
to go a point ahead,
and we had it rehearsed that, you know, like. The natural reaction in a game like that, if that happens, you put the heads down and you think. So we had it rehearsed, if this happens, Gabriel Irwin's to take a ball quickly out of the net out and have it placed, and within seconds it was kicked out and it was down at the other end. And actually, I think Micheál Collins or someone had it in the net, but he called it back for a free 14-yard free drawing game. They went ahead again then, and Jimmy Burke got what we call a famous pushover try. He kind of hit it with his shoulder and his knee and his body. Being touted for rugby league the next week, kind of. so in that sense, we had come through a lot of battles, and we knew that this game was going to be difficult. But Tyrone got a goal midway through the second half to go 2 points ahead. It was a very low scoring game. There was no blanket defences, but it was low scoring. Won, I think, 12 points to 1-6, and they got a goal to go a point ahead, and I think we got the 4 points after that. We won 12 points, so there was no panic, and I think that was again something that was a benefit of our mental preparation, that you if you panic about things, you're unlikely to solve them, whereas if you keep calm and do something to solve them, you can, and that worked there, and nearly worked in the final, but didn't.
the unfinished business thing clearly would motivate you as a player.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Like, I mean, the first thing you'd think of, well, is there any point of us going up here at all? If that's, the, you know, yeah. So, but then you'd redouble your resolve then and yeah. certainly say, well, we're going to give it a right shot here. But we weren't underestimating ourselves by anything, because we knew we had a good side, and, yeah. you know, yeah. and we would have stood up at the best there, to be quite honest. And that's the way we felt. Mm. And that's the only way you can feel when you're going out playing in the final. You have to believe that you can win it, or a semi-final. You have to believe that you can win it. And it's no different to any game. So it just redoubled our efforts to make sure that we were going to win the game.
How did you play after the knock to the head?
Well, I think you have to ask Jono that one.
We did fine. Every time you went near the ball, the stander upped it. The stander upped it, you know.
Maybe he's saying, maybe I should have left him on the sideline.
No fear. Just one other thing I just wanted to ask you about at that time in particular, John, is about your backroom team. Because it's very interesting. Two names that pop up that perhaps some people forget were in your backroom team around that time were Tommy Gorman and Eddie O'Sullivan. Did you bring both of those in?
No. Just to clarify, Tommy Gorman was with me in Mayo, in the sense that, like, it was like at that time. Nowadays, if you see in Croke Park, I mean, the Dublin backroom team, 25 or 30 people, and so on. We didn't have. I mean, I went to training in 89 with all the footballs and all the bollards in the boot, and there wasn't even, there was no such thing as kit vans or anything else. So it was, I did first aid courses, I was strapping ankles, all that kind of thing. You were nearly, Charlie Collins, Christy O'Hare, Mick Higgins and Shamie Daly. And Shamie was brilliant for me. He was really mentoring me as a manager, because he had trained the 1970 team that won the league, and he was came in as a selector, and he was absolutely brilliant in the sense that he would have, as the man says, he was good with the county board and dealing with them and all of that. So it was a good backdrop. But we did have Tommy Gorman then was helping out with the, he used to do the previews of the game at that time for RT, and he said to me one day, if I can help or whatever. And it all started there, really. And when I was Leitrim, and I did it in Galway. Eddie O'Sullivan wasn't... It was in Galway. I was Eddie on board, where effectively he used training in a gym, and I was trying to get, at that time strength and conditioning was very important. He had the rugby background, but he had a lot of knowledge, and he came on board, and halfway through the year he was appointed coach of the USA rugby team. So he devised all the different training plans and all of that. So there was a lot of faxes flying between the west coast of America and during that season. So that's where that. But it was, in other words, you were getting people's expert and advice. And I'd always have an open mind. This is about winning. It doesn't matter who gets every, like, and I'd say to the players as well. If we win, everyone is a winner in this dressing room. So it wasn't about egos or anything else. We were trying to get the unity of purpose there, and though I'd be forever grateful for all the expert advice that I would have got from people, whether it was nutrition or food or whatever. We tried to lift the bar and to break the ceiling in every way we could. So all of that, and the diet sheets, and I don't know whether Willie Joe had them off by heart or not, but it was my wife, Geraldine, is a home economics teacher, so she had done a lot of stuff on the food side of things. So it was all a kind of a voluntary thing, so we did it. It was very enjoyable, and there was great fun in it at times, as we've alluded to, and that's what I'd hope, that fun is still there. But it's a serious business now,
What sort of recipes are we talking, Willie Joe, during that era?
It took me a while to get into the diet sheet, because hence I have to do the extra training down the Lack and Strand. So I said, maybe this is read those sheets, maybe I might have a better chance.
There was a tradition at the time that I remember when I was training for Mayo, like as a player. You went down after training, you got a big steak before the championship, and chips, and you were drinking Lucozade or Club Orange and club milks afterwards. When I think back, I said, Jesus, we have to change this anyway. So probably when I introduced the salads and all this kind of thing, the boys thought, well, here's the county board cutting the budget.
The Kerry fellas are probably on big steaks down there now. Yeah. Chips and salads.
The lettuce coming out our ears here, you know. But it was for a good reason. But again, you know, those were the kind. That's the evolution, if you like, from along the way. But that's. Look at it. I'm happy that I introduced some things anywhere along the way that have lasted. That now you have, like the psychologist at the time, you had to keep it under the radar, because if the word got out, they'd be calling in for the people with the white coats, like, in the sense of, so it was kept totally under the radar. Whereas now, Caroline Corrid and Liam Morgan or whoever, they're a vital part of any backroom team, you know.
Let's talk about this weekend then, just to finish up. Willie Joe, we'll go to you first. Are you confident, first of all, in terms of Mayo being able to dismantle this Tyrone team?
Well, I think it's a 50-50 game now. It's great to see a final where you don't have Kerry and Dublin. Now, we've suffered at the hands of Dublin over the last number of years. But I wouldn't see it anymore as a 50-50 because, I mean, the one way you look at it is Mayo has come through a fairly difficult route, right? They played Galway, which was anybody's game, really. And then they managed to overthrow Dublin. If you look at Tyrone, they had Donegal, they had Monaghan, and then they had Kerry. They have actually put out the favourites, really, which was Kerry. So I just think that it's certainly a great opportunity for us, but it's not going to be handed to us. And knowing the way Tyrone play their game, the way they sniffed out Kerry out there last week, or a couple of weeks ago, like, you just have to be, you just have to be on your guard. So the way I look at it is, for us to win it, I certainly think that we have to play the game on our terms, because if we don't, then we could come up short. And the fact, if you were to let Tyrone maybe ahead by 2 or 3 points, they're such great players at, I mean, cutting you off and smothering you out from letting you get up front. So I think there are a couple of aspects. And Mayo will probably need to get out of the blocks right away rather than the way they've come out against Dublin or Galway either. So I think it's going to be a ding-dong affair from the word go. I think it'll be a fairly physical game as well. But I think it'll be very close. But I just hope that our lads, from the experience that they've gained in Croke Park, having said that, Tyrone were there in 2018, so that's not too far away, not too far back. So, but I just think that I think Mayo just could shade it by a point or two.
John, having been Mayo manager relatively recently, what sort of a job has James Horan done over the last 10 years? How good a job has he done, knowing what situation the county was in when you left in your most recent time in charge?
I think he's done a fantastic job, to be honest. I mean, I knew when I left in 2010, the perception was that Mayo football was at a very low ebb. But the job that I had to do between 2007 and 2010 was a different job than I had ever done before. You were taking a team that had played in, some of them, in 4 All-Irelands, and they were going to be breaking up, and you had to kind of stay competitive. In fact, I met James Horan a couple of years ago, and I said to him, you have to do the job now that I had to do that time. So, the Aidan O'Shea's, the Kevin McLaughlin's, I think all apart from the Killian O'Connor's and a few others would have been, Lee Keegan was on a development panel at that stage. So James, did fantastic with them, but I knew that they had a quality that would take Mayo very, I would have thought to win. They didn't, but they went so close. And now, like, what he has done this time is he has transitioned a team in 2 years and playing in 2 All-Irelands. I mean, it's an unbelievable tribute to the talent that's there, and also to the way it has been brought forward so quickly. And I mean, if you were told, like, in advance of the year that you wouldn't have Killian O'Connor for the year, and that, for instance, that you wouldn't have Oisin Mullen the last day, who had been such a pillar for the last 2 years, and then that Aidan O'Shea would be replaced during the match, you'd say, well, that there goes our chances anyway. But, like, there was, I talked earlier about the unity of purpose, but that was there. And I think that is really, that anything is possible now. And I think, I think any pundit that predicts definitively this All-Ireland is talking poppycock, to be honest. It goes as far as that. But what I would say is that the injection of confidence that we'll have brought beating Dublin is you can't overestimate it. And I know when you get to an All-Ireland final, I've been involved in a fair few of them over the years, you can get the more out of players at that level because the belief systems are so high, and I think Mayo's will be high. Like, for instance, Enda Hessian, like, who's a young rookie player, played, I think, picked against Sligo, didn't play after that or didn't start after that anyway, and would have been probably tentative enough against Sligo, came on in the Dublin game, and I knew there was a close up on the, as I was watching that match on television, and it wasn't fear that was in his eyes, it was let me get on there. Yeah. And I was talking to his uncles in the last couple of weeks, and I said to them, Jesus, you must have installed jets in him, like, because I said he was going across the television, but I couldn't pick him up that because he was gone out of view. So that's what I mean, that they have a great chance. But I'd agree with Willie Joe that, like, there's no way that I said it after the Galway game that they wouldn't, if they allowed Dublin 5 or 6 points ahead, that they wouldn't get it back. Now, as it happened, they did. Like, yeah, yeah. But I wouldn't try it a third time because I think whoever gets that, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be far ahead, but I think the first 20 minutes of this game is going to be ferocious, absolutely ferocious. And if Tyrone are allowed to dictate the game, you know, for instance, in the first quarter, the last day, your three full backs had scored. So it's not Mayo have not only to mind McKenna and up front Matty Donnelly they have to, you know, if they have to get on the front foot, but they also have to mind the way they come up. So if Mayo kind of counteract that in the early period, and not necessarily to be far ahead, it's giving them a great chance. But I think, as I said, you know, and again, something is going to happen in this final, always does, yeah, that you can't predict. Or be, I have a feeling there'll be red cards, and I hope I'm wrong, but there'll definitely be black ones, and depending on who gets them. Now, like, Joe McQuillan is reffing his fourth All-Ireland final, and it's a hugely important thing that it's going to be physical on both sides, but I think it's important that it's not dangerous or ugly. And I think that there's a fierce onus on, and I think we have seen a bit of slippage this year between the officials, to be honest. And I'd be very supportive of referees, but in some of the things that have happened, and I think I hope that doesn't become the factor that makes the difference. But I think from a team's point of view, both sides are going to have to be careful to play it physical, but stay on the field.
Sure. So you're going along with Willie Joe tentatively, Mayo by a slender margin?
No, I'd be hoping they would, but I'm not, like, what I'm saying is if certain, like, I'll be very encouraged after 15 minutes if Mayo are very much in the game, taking the game to Tyrone, that Tyrone haven't dictated the play at that stage. If they have, then we're in trouble. You know, I think there's this automatic thing among the fans, which is great because it's not Kerry or Dublin, that automatically, oh, well, it's in the bag for us now. So it doesn't work like that. You get nothing that you're entitled to. You have to earn it. And I think Mayo, this present Mayo team, can do that. But I suppose in some way I'm afraid to predict it but I would hope absolutely that they, because I think the chapter needs to be closed. And this team, the great thing about this team is that if it did get across the line, if we had won an 89 or a 96 yeah, sure. final, there'd be more than one All-Ireland and Sam Maguire and Mayo over the last number of years. And so that's at stake as well. Now, yeah. It's the old song, to win just once will be fine for this weekend. But it's, they're young enough to progress farther than that then. But let's take first things first and hope that the chapter is closed on this heartbreak that we've all been part of.
That's for sure. Well, lads, enjoy it on Saturday as best you can. Thanks a million for meeting up with me. It's a pleasure spending time in your company. John O'Mahony, Willie Joe Patton. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks a lot.